revised my title slightly to the role of two charitable societies in the spread of the gospel in the Highlands. Of the various societies that have had an influence on the spread of the gospel in the Highlands and Islands, I have chosen to narrow the scope in this paper to the Society for the Propagation of Christian Knowledge, SSPCK for short, and particularly the Edinburgh Society for the Support of Gaelic Schools, or the Gaelic School Society, as it was commonly called. My main purpose in considering the former of these societies is largely to show why the latter was needed. And it is for this reason that, along with the church's parochial schools, the SSPCK would not teach the reading of Gaelic in their schools and failed in their endeavour to establish the English language amongst the people as the language of worship and religious instruction, which necessitated the development 100 years later, in 1810, of the Gaelic School Society, a few years after the SSPCK had translated and published the Gaelic Bible. There being no written history of either society, I have mainly used the society's own publications in my paper. First, coming to the SSPCK, in 1616, during that dismal prelatic period when Robert Bruce was banished to Inverness, the Privy Council enacted legislation establishing parish schools, declaring that through these means they intended to abolish the Gaelic language, the Act stating that the vulgar English tongue be universally planted, and the Irish language, which is one of the chief and principal causes of the continuance of barbarity and incivility amongst the inhabitants of the Isles and Highlands, may be abolished and removed. It would be a long time before parish schools were generally enacted by law in the North, not until after the General Assembly of 1699. But the aversion of the state to Gaelic remained, and the Church, at the very least, submitted to that view. The new schools were to be taught in English. Many of the Highland parishes were large and sparsely populated, and it was recognised that one school per parish was insufficient. Endeavours were made by private citizens to form a society after the model of the London-based Society for the Propagation of Christian Knowledge, which had itself made some tentative moves to work in the Highlands. However, it was preferred to initiate a new Presbyterian society, and the General Assembly, taking up the plan, obtained from the Crown in 1709 a royal charter and called it the Society in Scotland for Propagating Christian Knowledge. It has been argued that the disastrous Darien scheme of the 1690s was seen as a judgment upon Scotland for its failure to evangelise the Highlands, and that the founding of the SSPCK was partly a response to that perceived judgment. Woodrow, in volume one of his Analecta, describes in January 1710 inquiring of a dying elderly woman in his parish, Jonet Ferguson, whom he described as a most solid, judicious Christian with very little din, if she feared that God was about to leave Scotland. She answered not. I asked wherefore she thought so. She answered, God has sent the gospel of late to the Highlands and the North, and that was more than ever was in so great a measure in this church. And she could not think God was going to leave us when doing thus. Initially, the purpose of the new society was to supplement the educational provision of the parish schools in the Gaelic-speaking North. The parish school, along with the church and manse, were typically located in the largest town and village, and the SSPCK school in the next largest, or at an opposite extremity of the parish. The heritors were required by law to fund a teacher for the parish school, but it was necessary to look for voluntary funding for the new society's teachers. The General Assembly called for congregational collections, which, together with substantial donations by wealthy individuals, proved sufficient despite the financial crisis that had resulted from the Darien failure. In obtaining capital to get the society established, and in due course it made commercial arrangements to provide an income for its activities. The ministers and prominent men of Edinburgh were appointed a committee to govern the society, and its affairs were guided on a day-to-day basis by secretaries, usually Edinburgh ministers. The main outlay was the salaries of teachers. The school buildings were a local responsibility, which usually meant that the heritor was asked to agree to its construction before a teacher was provided, as well as to provide a parish school according to law. The teachers were also required to act as part-time catechists and to read the scriptures to the people on the Sabbath, particularly where they lived far from the church, but they were not to preach. In the beginning, the aversion to Gaelic being spoken in school was not enforced. Indeed, the society supplied the newly translated Gaelic psalmody and catechism produced by the Synod of Argyll to aid the non-classroom side of the work. But officially, the society aimed at the suppression of both the Gaelic language as well as popery. To this end, the teaching of Latin was also forbidden. The first 11 schools opened in 1711 with teachers who were university graduates. They were paid well, and these schools made a promising start. However, the directors of the society found that their ambition to have at least one of their schools in every Highland parish was not likely to be achieved according to the initial model. So over the years, they offered the best graduates of their few existing schools employment as teachers at a third of the cost of a professional teacher. Most of these young and experienced teachers were from Perthshire or the Grampians, and they were sent throughout the Highlands and Islands. As a consequence, the reputation of the schools suffered, and the local people were not that enthusiastic about English language education from boys that were poorly trained and spake a different dialect of Gaelic. The pattern, however, was set, and over most of its existence, the great majority of SPCK teachers remained poorly paid, the society itself describing it as a meagre allowance. As an example, Finlay Munro, who was employed as SSPCK teacher in Coleraine between 1814 and 1818, had an annual salary of £12, rising to £14. And that was by no means the lowest. Following the Jacobite Rebellion of 1715, attitudes in Edinburgh against Gaelic teaching, or even speaking, in schools hardened and began to be enforced, which effectively hindered the useful work of the schools. In 1721, three Highland ministers, Murdo MacLeod of Glenelg, Walter Ross of Kilmuirster, and John Mackay of Lairg, came to the SSPCK annual general meeting with a petition for Gaelic education to be given a place in their schools. The petition stated, through a defect of the present method of teaching some of the society's schools in their Highland bounds, these good ends are proposed are much frustrate, for in places where nothing of the English tongue is understood, the children are taught to read only in English, which they understand not, and are denied the benefit of expounding and translating the same by the help of their masters and into their mother tongue, as is the ordinary fashion and practice of the grammar schools, and thus they return home, able indeed to read the Bible, but understand not even the plainest historical part of what they read. And after residing in the country where they hear nothing but Irish, in a little time they entirely forget what with much labour and long time they acquired, which, as it proves, a great discouragement to the parents to send them to school. So the principal design of the society in propagating Christian knowledge is thereby obstructed. Despite being very prescient, the petition was merely referred to a language subcommittee. In fact, 2 years later, the committee met with Highland Presbytery representatives attending the General Assembly to discuss schools and the most effectual method of extirpating the Irish language. The weak educational attainments of the SSPCK schools are well illustrated by St. Kilda. The very first schoolmaster the society employed was sent to that island in 1710. He labored for nearly 20 years until his death, and others followed on. But in 1756, a visiting minister found all but four of the islanders to be illiterate. That was the result of 46 years of teaching English. In 1725, the Crown established the Royal Bounty, a fund provided for the church to counter Roman Catholic missionary work in the north and west of the country. The society was resourced out of this fund by the General Assembly to employ parish catechists, which increased its scope and usefulness. And in 1738, it again expanded its scope by opening practical schools for girls, which were called schools after the second patent. By 1748, there were a total of 134 schools with 7,800 pupils, averaging 58 per schoolmaster. By the beginning of the 19th century, the total number of schools and scholars had approximately doubled again. By that time, the society also funded missionaries in some places where there was no ministry, or as an assistant to an infirm minister. But of all the beneficial schemes the SSPCK provided for the Highlands and Islands, by far the greatest impact was achieved by the translation of the Bible into Gaelic. After the dust had settled on the 1745 Jacobite Rebellion and the aftermath of Culloden, the society relented in its opposition to Gaelic, permitting children to be taught to read Gaelic on condition that they first learn to read English, although they did not resource Gaelic teaching. At that time, however, the decision was made to translate the New Testament into Gaelic. This was a surprise given the hitherto strong opposition to Gaelic. It is possible that the most well-known of all the society's teachers, the Gaelic poet Dougald Buchanan, teacher and catechist in Kinlochranach, had an influence on that decision. Reverend Alexander MacFarlane of Arrochar, who had translated Baxter's Call to the Unconverted, was approached, but he being unable to proceed, Reverend James Stewart of Killin was chosen, assisted by Buchanan, as well as by Reverend James Fraser of Alness. It was Buchanan who saw the translation through the press at Edinburgh. Thereafter, much of the Old Testament was translated by Stuart's son, Reverend John Stuart, minister of Lass, and the last part by Dr. Smith. The whole Bible was finally published in multiple volumes in 1802. The last part of the Old Testament being found not acceptable by some, it was redone by Reverend Alexander Stuart of Dingwall, and the whole revised version published in 1807. The SSPCK and the British and Foreign Bible Society each printing the Bible in one volume. Having now the Bible in their own tongue, it was necessary that the people obtain it and learn to read it. Which brings us to the second part of the paper, the Gaelic School Society. The two elder sons of John Brown of Haddington, the Reverend Ebenezer and Reverend John Brown, had various tracts translated into Gaelic for distribution to the Highland drovers that came south to sell their cattle. But to their dismay, they found they were illiterate. In 1805, Ebenezer Brown wrote to Reverend Angus McIntosh of Tain, secretary of the Northern Missionary Society, could he consult with his fellow ministers as to the feasibility of establishing schools to teach Gaelic reading. After consultation, Mr. McIntosh sent back a discouraging reply. The project was shelved. There was a deeply ingrained but untested belief at that time that children could not be taught to read Gaelic without first learning English. Many years previously, however, a Welsh clergyman had shown that such a thing could readily be accomplished. The Reverend Griffiths Jones, about 1730, had established a school in his poor country congregation in South Wales to teach the people to read the Bible. Supported only by his own congregation, he started a circulating school, and despite opposition from the bishops, the school prospered, and by the time of his death in 1861, he had established, with the assistance of the London SPCK, 218 circulating schools, and taught over 150,000 adults, as well as children, to read the Bible in Welsh, during which time there was a notable revival in South Wales, and a number of useful ministers, such as Daniel Rowlands, were converted. Although Jones's schools did not flourish after his death, the Reverend Thomas Charles of Bala, who was converted as a young man under Rowlands' preaching, knew of the history of these schools, and he set out to create a similar system in North Wales, an area which had hitherto resisted the Calvinistic Methodists. And in this and in other endeavours, his ministry proved to be a great blessing to the area. In his latter years, he thought that the system he had adopted would be ideal for the north of Scotland, and he wrote to various people, including Ebenezer Brown, and eventually a meeting was organised in Edinburgh in December 1810, and the Society in Edinburgh for the Support of Gaelic Schools was founded the following month. Many of those who attended were of the Seceders or Baptists. Two men in particular were instrumental in getting the society off the ground. According to Dr. McCree, the person who did more than any other to found the society was Charles Stewart of Dunearn, a medical doctor. He was said to be a very peculiar man, belonging to no denomination, but had many connections. The other key figure was Clive Anderson, an Edinburgh Baptist preacher. Dr. McCree himself was a founder and often served as one of the directors until his death in 1835. Other notable directors in the early years were Dr. Jones of Lady Glenorchy's and James Haldane. Later auxiliary societies would be formed in other parts of Scotland to financially support the work of the Edinburgh Society. In the 1830s, some of these would branch off on their own, bringing hardship to the main society. The society remained non-denominational, but as time went on, more and more evangelicals from the established church became involved. And after the disruption, it was Free Church ministers that mostly occupied the important positions. But in the beginning, it was Anderson who was the organisational force behind establishing the schools. He first wrote to Thomas Charles to obtain guidance on the rules and practice of the society. Charles's advice included what would be a most important consideration. "My first greatest care has been in the appointment of proper teachers. They are all poor persons, as my wages are but small. Besides, a poor person can assimilate himself to the habits and mode of living among the poor, as it is his own way of living. It is requisite he should be a person of moderate abilities, but above all that he be truly pious, moral, decent, humble, and engaging in his whole deportment, not captious, not disputatious, not conceited, no idle saunterer, no tattler, not given to the indulgence of any idle habits. My care here has been abundantly repaid, for my teachers in general are as anxious as myself in the success of the work and the eternal welfare of those they are employed to instruct in their most important concerns." This advice became the practice of the new society in choosing its teachers. In looking back in 1852, Reverend Robert Finlayson of Locks wrote, "There is one peculiar circumstance in regard of the Gaelic School Society to which I would direct attention, and it is this, that they have all along, since the commencement of their operations, made choice of men of piety as teachers, insofar as they could discern, and consequently the Lord has vouchsafed his countenance and blessed their labours." The first act of the society was to write to ministers of Gaelic-speaking parishes to ascertain the state of affairs with respect to literacy. Overall, 86% of the people were unable to read any language. The remainder could read some English, and very few could read Gaelic. And many of the English readers did not understand fully what they read. Stornoway was the most literate parish at 30%, and Harris the least at 3%. The Dingwall minister, Alexander Stewart, who afterwards became involved in the society, was initially cautious, given the prevailing view that it was necessary to understand English. He employed a local man at his own expense to see whether it was feasible to teach the illiterate children to read Gaelic. Some other ministers were enthusiastic from the beginning, particularly Thomas Ross in Loch Broom, James Russell in Gairloch, and Colin McKenzie in Stornoway. And the first three schools were established in their parishes in 1811, in Coigach, Mellaveig, and Babel. Dr. Ross knew the viability of teaching children to read Gaelic because there was a woman in his parish, Margaret Sinclair, from the Dundonald area, who had been teaching her neighbours to read Gaelic with much success. In May 1812, he wrote to the society of his experience of examining their first school at Badantarbet. "The whole class acquitted themselves so well that I have very seldom in all my life experienced more real satisfaction than I did during the few hours that I spent amongst them. It is truly gratifying to think that in the short space of 5 months, so great a change should happen in so extensive a district of country as that which has happened in the Aird of Coigach since November last, a change by which the scriptures of truth are now accessible from day to day in so many families and villages which before that time were involved in comparative ignorance and darkness." Each of these circulating schools was supposed to remain a maximum of 2 years at one location, although that was not always enforced. A further 17 teachers were appointed in 1812, and thereafter the numbers grew steadily until by 1828 and 29, the peak years, there was a total of 85 teachers. The demand always far outstripped the ability of the society to meet it. A plea from the Lochcarran minister in 1813 expressed a typical desire. "Jean Town is a throng village, and they begin now to have a relish for the word. If the boys and girls of Jean Town could write a petition, they would ask the favour to continue the schoolmaster with them till winter. Permit me to second their wishes. May God sanctify their curiosity, for they wish to read the Bible." It was the translation of the Hebrew scriptures into Greek that prepared the way for the gospel. Our Lord is called the desire of all nations, and that desire was excited in the souls of the Gentiles by reading the scriptures in their own language. I believe that God sanctifies the curiosity of children in many cases. In whatever way they are caught, it is no matter to me. If so be they are caught sooner or later, gratify us then, dear sir, and give us another turn at the school. Yours respectfully and affectionately, Lachlan McKenzie. As a consequence of the great demand, not just for teachers, but for textbooks, New Testaments and Bibles, the society would often run into substantial debt, which would be followed with urgent appeals for increase in support, which were usually answered. As the years went by and the awareness of the benefits the schools conferred, not only were there increasing requests from ministers, but communities themselves petitioned the society directly to send them a teacher. Typically, the day school scholars would be children with a few adults, mostly married women, and the elderly. Night schools were held for adults who could not attend during the day, and often the teacher would be working 12 or even 14 or more hours a day, and that every day of the week. Sabbath schools were always held, and sometimes the teacher would meet with the people more than once on the Sabbath if they were far from the church. Reverend Alexander McBean, Minister of Kincardine, provides an account in 1815 of an extraordinary range of scholar ages in his school. "It was not in my power," he says, "till yesterday to visit the school at Glencalvie. Since my return home, the snow lay deep in the strath, the rivers were frozen over, and thaw swelled them to such a height that it was impossible for a horse to cross. Yesterday, however, I accomplished my purpose, and my pains were amply compensated by the progress I witnessed in the school since my former visitation of it. A house crowded with 60 scholars of all ages, from the Glencalvie veteran Ivoroch now in his 117th year, to literally speaking, the infant in the cradle, for the mother of the infant is one of the scholars, and such was her ardour of desire to learn that she brought the child in cradle to the school. The rapidity with which Gaelic reading was acquired by so many, young and old, was a matter of astonishment, particularly in the early days of the schools, given the prevailing view on how difficult it would be. Reverend David Carment of Roskeen expressed this surprise in a letter in 1824 concerning the school at Saltburn. "I have in this school witnessed a thing which I had often seen stated in reports, but about which I confess I was somewhat sceptically inclined. Two men advanced in life, fathers of families, one of them having his son, a stout young man in the same class as himself, and these two reading the Gaelic testaments correctly. And yet the one did not know the alphabet, the letter of the alphabet, and the other merely knew the letters. On the 15th of December last, less than 3 months ago, I confess progress so astonishing is hardly credible, yet the fact is notorious here. Schools were planted wherever there was a willing people, and that included Roman Catholic populations, such as on the islands of Barra and Sandre. Dr. MacDonald Ferrantosh wrote concerning the examination of a school in Strathglass, "The progress they have made in reading and spelling is truly astonishing. 70 of them read chapters of the New Testament with tolerable accuracy, most of whom 4 months ago did not know a letter of the alphabet. It was pleasing to see several Roman Catholic children among the number learning to read that volume, which through faith in Christ Jesus is able to make them wise unto salvation." In an article in the Inverness Journal in 1817, Alexander Stewart reflected on the people of Dingwall when he first arrived in 1805. "I was astonished at their ignorance. It was apparent that the people, in pronouncing the words of the catechism in English, annexed to them no ideas whatsoever. This was the case alike with parents and with children, whose knowledge extended no further than to words and sounds. The mind was uninformed and uncultivated. In cases of extreme ignorance, public preaching can effect little. To correct ignorance, schooling rather than preaching is the thing chiefly wanted." And he went on to write that after the itinerating Gaelic school came to his parish, an ardour for knowledge was soon excited in the minds of the young, and a corresponding interest in the parents. "In subsequent examinations, I could not but observe a sensible advancement in religious intelligence and knowledge among the older people, which could easily be traced to the instructions first imparted to the children." In that regard, Reverend David Mackenzie of Farr in 1819 stated, "I find that parents who cannot read in family worship cause the younger branches of the family who have been taught at your schools to take this part of worship." Dr. Stewart contributed, both as a writer of a textbook for students and a guide for teachers, and when he was translated to Edinburgh in 1820, he became a secretary of the society until his death in 1821. The Gaelic School Society had thus shown the way, and in 1817, the SSPCK reversed their policy of requiring scholars to be taught first in English, and thereafter they supplied Dr. Stewart's textbook to their own teachers to begin the children's education in Gaelic. The rapid improvement in morals in general, and Sabbath-keeping and church-going in particular, which followed the arrival of the Gaelic schools, was noted by many ministerial correspondents. However, of all the many interesting letters and anecdotes that are contained in the Society's annual reports, the most interesting and significant concern the spiritual prosperity of the work and the saving fruits of the labours of the many excellent teachers that the society employed.
Donald Munro was one of the most notable men of Skye at that day, a man of great grace and gifts, and had lost his sight in childhood. He is said to have been relieved of his position as SSPCK catechist in that parish after the arrival of the Reverend Donald Ross in 1809. However, we read in the 1816 Society report from the same minister, "I never witnessed greater progress than Donald Munro's scholars make, and I am always the more sensible of this, as I make it a rule to visit the school and examine it at least once every week. Munro is most indefatigable, and I expect from present appearances that his labours will be very successful." This Donald Munro was Gaelic Society teacher in Kilmuir from 1815 to 21. Whether it was the same man as blind Donald Munro, I'm not certain. According to Roderick McGowan's account in The Men of Skye, blind Donald Munro's labours in Kilmuir were signally blessed to many souls. Another Skye Gaelic teacher whose labours were much blessed was Norman MacLeod. In the 1843 report, Reverend Roderick MacLeod of Sneesort gives an interesting account of the beginnings of the Fairy Bridge revival of 1842, which took place in Norman MacLeod's school at Uinish in the north end of the Vaternish Peninsula. He was sent there in 1839, and in 1840 there was an awakening in the school, but by the time he was due to leave in June 1842, he saw a spiritual declension amongst the people. The day before leaving, which was a Sabbath, he earnestly addressed the people on the subject of the barren fig tree, inquiring of them what fruit they had brought forth in his time amongst them. Roderick MacLeod wrote, "Many fell down as if struck dead. In this state, they continued together the whole night, and instead of the teacher going away on the morrow, as he had previously intended, such was the awakening that he remained for 16 days reading and praying, the people continuing to assemble with so little intermission day and night that he could only get about 2 hours sleep early every morning. From there, the awakening extended to Gaelic schools at Geary and Glendale, and then throughout every part of Skye, and even to the small isles. Roderick MacLeod was called upon to address the immense crowds that gathered, first at Stein and thereafter at Fairy Bridge. He in turn called on others, including Dr. MacDonald Ferrantosh, to help. Dr. MacDonald stated that during that revival, according to those who were in the best position to judge, of the 25,000 inhabitants of Skye, there were few families where there was not one or more people seriously impressed. Yet another Skye Gaelic teacher whose name is associated with revival was John MacLeod. He was teacher first at Inverness during the time of the 1812-14 revival under Reverend John Shaw's ministry. Thereafter, he was moved to Vaternish in 1817, and in 1820 across to Galson in the north of Lewis, where after 2 years of conducting the school there, the first of the Lewis revivals began. This infuriated the moderate minister of Barvis, Reverend William McCrae, who complained to the society of their teacher preaching in his parish and turning the people insane. John MacLeod was found to be in breach of Rule 7 of the society. The teachers to be employed by this society shall neither be preachers nor public exhorters, stated or occasional, of any denomination whatever. So they had to part ways. He was, however, employed by the people of Galson themselves, and after Reverend Alexander MacLeod came to Uig, he was employed by another society as a teacher there. Shortly after John MacLeod's death in 1832, the Uig minister wrote to the society that John MacLeod had, despite parting ways with them, left half his estate to the society and the other half to his widow, and whatever portion she would not use was to go to them also. The Uig minister had a high opinion of John MacLeod. He wrote, he was at unremitting pains to instruct his fellow men in the whole doctrines of inspiration with an understanding and feeling which evidently gave satisfaction that these doctrines were made spirit and life to his own soul. He had the glory of God and the salvation of souls ardently at heart. No Christian, indeed, within our knowledge of information, was a greater wrestler at a throne of grace for a crumb of the hidden manna for his own soul and for the prosperity of Zion at large. And we have seen no fellow traveler to the heavenly city in our day who was so pointed and tender, both in precept and example, than this singularly devoted character during the time he tabernacled among us.
The same minister had perhaps a closer relationship with the society than any other. Whatever he asked for, he obtained. When he first came to Uigen, April 1824, he wrote to Enebra outlining the great needs of the parish. And then he sent letter after letter until he obtained what he desired, pious teachers together with lots of Bibles and New Testaments. There were two Gaelic Society teachers in the parish when he arrived, but he pointedly stated in one of his early letters, "I labour alone without a catechist or a useful teacher within the bounds of my parish." Those two teachers were no longer employed the following year, and by 1826 he had been given six pious Gaelic teachers and hundreds of Bibles and New Testaments. In 1827, he wrote, "I desire to praise the Lord for the wonderful things he has brought about for this parish in his providence and grace since I came among them, and I cannot be sufficiently grateful to the directors of your society for all they have done and are still doing to forward the good work and strengthen my hands among my people." Malcolm McRitchie, afterwards a minister, first in Strathy and then in Locks, was one of those teachers sent by the society to Uig. Francis McBean, who later was Free Church minister in Fort Augustus, was the Gaelic school superintendent from 1820 to 1828, until he too parted ways with the society for maintaining his right to hold meetings. In the late 1850s and early 1860s, there were again revivals in the north of Lewis. Kenneth McPherson of Stornoway was a notable teacher whose labours in the Galson area were attended by much blessing. When he was moved to Lionel, the superintendent of schools wrote in 1858, "I have a strong conviction that the school here will yield a rich harvest. In the station which the teacher occupied previously, he was of immense use. The people were wonderfully changed through his labours." And so too it proved at Lionel in subsequent years. Indeed, at that period, there were quite a number of awakenings in the Gaelic schools throughout Lewis and Harris, as well as in North Uist and other islands. There were many other noteworthy Gaelic teachers, such as Roderick MacLeod of Assen, teacher in North Knapdale, and other places, Murdoch Fraser in Mull, John McPherson in Coigach, Nicol Nicholson, another Skyman who laboured in many places for over 45 years, George Campbell of Dornoch in Kinlochbervie and Scourie, whose character is sketched in Annals of the Disruption, where it is said he was a man who knew divinity not only experimentally but systematically, and his eldest son Walter, for many years Gaelic teacher in North Uist, of whom Reverend Donald MacFarlane wrote in 1891, he was a true man of God and a dear friend to me, a man that mellowed with the love of Christ and that did good work in the vineyard in his day. He is now beholding the face of Christ, who he so much loved and served on earth. Another North Uist Gaelic teacher was Malcolm McCorkadale, who became Free Presbyterian missionary there. Reverend Neil McIntyre, in his obituary, stated that when he was first appointed Gaelic teacher, he was examined by both Dr. Begg and Mr. Martin. His labours and sleet were said to be much owned of the Lord, but he fell out of favour with MacPhail, the Free Church minister, because of the strong stance he took against Union, and he was then removed to his native island. In 1862, Reverend Robert Elder of Rothsay described the contribution of the Lewis Gaelic teachers thus: "Those who know the healthy character of the religion of Lewis, the wholesome influence which certain excellent ministries there exercise, and the extent to which the means of grace have been owned and blessed there for years past, will count it a high testimony to the character of your teachers that almost all of them are in the way of being invited to address the Friday meetings and are highly prized by the multitudes who seem thirsting for the word of life. Their influence for good in their several localities also is universally admitted to be second only to that of the Free Church ministers. And indeed, these ministers testify that the teachers have been mainly instrumental in stirring up and guiding the hopeful spirit of inquiry which so extensively pervades the island. There were also a few female teachers, such as the aforementioned Margaret Sinclair in Loch Broom." During his second visit to St. Kilda, Dr. MacDonald gave an interesting account in the 1827 report of his examination of the Gaelic school there. He asked the children to read Luke chapter 7, and then asked a series of searching questions, which he records together with their answers. An example: "How many natures has Christ?" asked the doctor. "Two," answered a fifth boy. "The nature of God and the nature of man. In which of these natures did he die?" "In the nature of man," says he. "God could not die." "Of what use then was the divine nature in him?" After some pause, for the question seemed to stagger them, one of the girls replied, "He would not be able to save us unless he were God." Another girl adds, "And besides, it supported his human nature and their suffering." "Oh yes," says a boy of about 13, "and gave value to those sufferings. Literally, as expressed by him in his own language, put merit into these sufferings." The depth of understanding achieved in the Gaelic schools was in marked contrast to the aforementioned lack of understanding that Alexander Stewart had found upon his arrival in Dingwall, when the schools were taught only in English. Returning now to Woodrow's question posed in 1710 to Jonet Ferguson if she feared that God was about to leave Scotland, her answer in the negative because of the begun work in the north. Woodrow noted that the more general feeling at that time was that judgments were impending. The course of events proved that it was not so much that God left Scotland, but that in some measure the blessing was withheld from the established church. Moderates formed the majority for virtually the whole of the remaining period of the 18th and into the 19th century, not only blighting the work of the church itself, but the SSPCK, which was closely associated with it. The work of spreading the gospel in the Highlands and Islands prospered after the publication of the Gaelic Bible, accompanied as it was by the divine blessing when the Gaelic Society carried out its work distributing and teaching the people to read the Bible. It is noteworthy that the established church itself then received a blessing, and the evangelicals became the majority in the period leading up to the disruption. Robert Finlayson wrote in one of his letters to the directors of the society, referring to Proverbs 11, verse 25, "They that water shall be watered themselves." And that truth could be applied to the church in Scotland in a wider sense when it engaged in spreading the gospel, not just with a Gaelic ministry, which it had long done, but with a Gaelic Bible, and the people taught to read it and thereby be convinced of the truth
of the preached word. In that regard, Dr. Mackay of Dunoon said that the scriptural way was shown us on the great day of Pentecost, when every man heard the word in his own tongue. Finally, 250 years after the Reformation, the Scottish Church had done its duty regarding the Highlands in giving it both a ministry and a Bible in the people's own language, and moreover were taught to read and understand it by those who were living epistles. Thus, despite the extreme poverty of many and the evictions that were a common and oppressive feature of the times, the people prospered spiritually, and many who emigrated were the salt of the earth where they settled. Robert Finlayson, known as the John Bunyan of the Highlands for his use of allegory, wrote in 1833, "The Gaelic Bible found its way to Lewis as the cake of barley bread fell into the camp of Midian, which smote their tents and overturned the camp. I suppose if a scoffer was to hear the dream and the interpretation, that he would make a jest of both, and imagine that of all means on earth this was the most unlikely, that a barley cake would smite the mighty host of Midian. But, behold, in a short time the vision did speak and did not tarry." In the same manner, if I am allowed to make comparisons, the Bible, that sword of God's mouth, found its way to this remote island and did smite the mighty host of the Prince of Darkness and overturned the strongholds of ignorance and superstition, swearing and Sabbath breaking, etc., etc. I am aware that the knowledge of the Scriptures has prepared the minds of the people to receive the truth by the instrumentality of the preaching of the gospel, although it is to be lamented that there are still many among us like Gallio, caring nothing about these things. Perhaps I am still within the mark when I maintain that Lewis is now as enlightened as any other district of the Highlands, and if it were not for the exertions of your society, and likewise the cooperation of the proprietor and his amiable consort, the peasantry of Lewis would, in all probability, have continued to this day ignorant of the Scriptures. Through the Lord's favour, much had been contributed by both the SSPCK and the Gaelic Schools Society to undermining the kingdom of darkness in the north. But the enemy did not remain idle. In 1872, after the National Education Act was passed, English was again the language of the school, speaking Gaelic being actively discouraged or punished, which marked the beginning of the end of the connection between the people and the Gaelic Bible. And sadly for very many, the Bible in their new language of English, it was neglected in an increasingly secular society, having many pernicious influences which had not been known by the Gaelic-speaking people of former days. That's my paper.